So this is the second Upanishad in the series of Upanishads that we are hoping to cover. And for those of you who were not here for the first Upanishad that we covered, I think I will have to give some background information. But I'll try to make that information different than the first one, so that even those who were here for the first Upanishad will not have too much repetition. So this Upanishad that we are going to study is called Kena Upanishad. If we do the Sandhi of Kena plus Upanishad, it becomes Keno Upanishad, Keno Upanishad. So the name is not Keno, but it is Kena. Sandhi becomes Keno Upanishad. The first one that we had studied was Isavasya Upanishad. So in a traditional style of studying Upanishads, the first is always Isavasya, followed by Kena, that is followed by Katho Upanishad, followed by Prasna Upanishad, then Mundak Mandukya Upanishad, then Aitriya Taitriya Upanishad, then Chandogya, and finally Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. That makes the study of 10 Upanishads. So what is this Upanishad? And why are we studying Upanishads? Where are they contained? So maybe a little bit of repetition is important. So Vedas are the backbone of the scriptural philosophy of ancient India. Veda name is derived from Vid, means to know. So therefore we can say that Veda is simply the book of knowledge. Now, which knowledge? That is important. Is it the knowledge about secular science, or is it the knowledge about something much, much higher? So of course the answer is much more higher, because this is a philosophical lecture. This is not necessarily a traditional science or arts lecture, and therefore Veda is the book of knowledge about something that is higher. Now, Vedas can be divided into many segments. We looked at that last time. But in a sense, we can say that Veda has two parts. And there are actually four Vedas. So how do these four Vedas come about? So therefore, we know that the person who wrote Mahabharata, in the midst of which Bhagavad Gita is there, at the Vedavyasa, in his times, which may be 3 to 5 thousand years ago, he had traveled all over India collecting the wisdom that was available at that time. And according to the times, so in other words, some wisdom was much more ancient even in those days, and some was relatively recent. He took that knowledge and composed into four Vedas. So the most ancient is Rig Veda, followed by Yajur Veda, and Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda. So these are the four Vedas. Now in each Veda, there is a portion called Purva Kanda or Karma Kanda. And then there is a portion called the Vedanta, Veda Anta. So that which comes at the end of the Vedas, this is called Vedanta. So the highest philosophical truth is contained in this Vedanta, which is also otherwise known as Upanishads. So Vedanta and Upanishad is synonymous. However, today we also have other texts written by Sri Shankara himself, as well as more modern masters like Ramana Maharshi, ityadi. And we say that these are also Vedantic texts. In other words, they are actually dealing with the subject area of who am I? which falls under the general category of Vedanta or Upanishad. Therefore, we say these are also Vedantic texts. But they don't belong in the Veda. Okay. So, what is this? Two portions of this Veda. So, the Purva portion, the first portion, the earlier portion, the first portion of Vedas in every Veda, deals with a number of activities. And because it deals with number of activities, action is called karma. Therefore, it is called karma kanda. Kanda means portion. So, karma kanda. This is the portion which deals with what activities we must perform or we should perform. Now, the activities, as you know, can be of three types. We can do physical activity. We can act through our speech. And also we can act through our mind. So therefore, these activities can be broadly classified as kayik karma. Kaya means body. Kayik karma means those activities which are through the body. Vachik karma, those activities that are through speech. And manasik karma, those activities which are performed through mind. Now this manasik activity, the ones that are performed through mind alone, are also known as upasana. Okay, so whenever you hear this word upasana, those upasanas are nothing but manasik activity. Those activities are done through mind. So therefore you can have manasik puja. You can have manasik japa. Or you can have meditation, which is obviously done through mind. So what is manasik puja? Therefore you can actually sit in the corner of the room when the puja is going on. So you are not really performing the puja. But you are mentally performing it. So as the priest or the yajman or whoever is doing the puja is offering various oblations, you also mentally perform that oblation as if you are doing it yourself. That becomes a manasik puja. Manasik japa. So therefore any japa, any stuti, any glorification of a deity or a lord, you can actually do that with speaking the glorification or talk. With your speech you can do glorification. With loud voice it becomes uchchatam. Or if you are not doing it very loudly, but just so that only few people surround you can hear it, and it is manda. And then if you do it so that you only do it mentally inside, nobody can actually hear you, then it becomes mental, manasik japa. In fact, it is said, in Upadesh Sar, Raman Maharshi brings it out very nicely. He said that is the highest type of japa. So therefore, sometimes manasik upasanas are better than ritualistically and employing the body and the speech. Okay. Now, why is it given in the Vedas? What was the need for creating this whole section of karma kanda? So it is accepted in the Vedas that humans by nature will seek happiness. It is our inherent nature to be happy and peaceful. You are the most happy when you are peaceful, or you are most peaceful when you are most happy, isn't it? Peaceful and happiness goes together. So in the path of spirituality, initially, anyone who enters is seeking happiness through certain rituals. So the idea is that if I do these rituals, I will attain some peace in my mind, or I will attain some objects of my fascination, or I will be able to get what I want. An unprepared mind will be looking for happiness from external world of things and beings. So therefore Vedas wanted to prescribe that. They didn't say, no, don't do that. You should. You have reason to be happy, and if you can temporarily satisfy it by happiness from outer world, be so. So therefore, these activities in the Karmakand will lead to certain results. So one result is that there will be much better sadhan. Sadhan means my activities, how am I going to perform my activity? I'll have to perform the activities with my body, with my indriyas, with my sense organs, with my mind, with my intellect. So therefore these rituals will actually make my mind much compassionate, much more compassionate, much more ready. My intellect will become much sharper, more discriminative between what is good and bad. My body will become healthy. My senses will work as they should be working. So therefore all these benefits are, what are these benefits? These are the benefits that you can say are improvement in my own instruments, in my body, mind, intellect complex. So all these sadhana or upadhis will benefit. So that is number one. Number two is, whatever I was desiring, I will be able to acquire. So therefore the vishaya sukh will happen. The object of my gratification will come to me. Now, supposing I am capable of enjoying that object, and the object is also in front of me, but if the environment is not conducive, I will not be able to enjoy it. Isn't it? Environment is also very important. This is called desha. So therefore, such karmakand rituals will also lead to appropriate creation of environment for my enjoyment. So all the things that I was desiring, I'll be able to enjoy. And therefore elaborate rituals are given in the Vedas, in the first portion called the Karmakanda. The problem is that these fruits or results have certain handicaps. And an intelligent seeker, having gone through this upasana and karma, will come to understand that there is something missing. Perhaps it is that I am looking for the happiness at the wrong place. That happiness should have been mine. It is my birthright to be happy. It's my birthright to be peaceful. But perhaps the place where I'm looking for happiness is not appropriate. So I don't have the BMI chart here, but many of you have seen it. So the body, mind, intellect apparatus and then the perceiver, feeler, thinker, which is the jiva, which is the individualistic entity. The individualistic, the PFT will engage with the objects, emotions and thoughts of the world to gain happiness. But as long as that PFT, the perceiver, feeler, thinker entity in me is constrained within this body, mind and intellect, so that throughout my action, throughout my enjoyment also, I maintain this feeling that I am this body, mind and intellect. Then the enjoyment will not be appropriate. So the PFT, the jiva bhava, or the egocentric entity needs to widen itself and encompass something far greater than this individualistic body, mind and intellect. So what are these handicaps, what are these limitations of the fruits? I think you know them very well. Let us look at them. Any happiness that we have obtained from these worldly interactions, have they been permanent? No matter how good the happiness, but the happiness has been complete. Can we claim that the happiness was so complete that after that I didn't want anything else? Or the happiness was so permanent that I forgot to seek anything else after that? Impossible. So therefore we can say that one of the problems is that these interactions with the outside worldly objects of things and beings only give me finite joy. It doesn't give infinite happiness. So any intelligent seeker who has gone through this karma kanda will come to that conclusion. It will be his or her conclusion. It is not something that Vedas will say, you shall not do this. It will be an intelligent conclusion of the seeker himself or herself that this interaction is not bringing me any infinite joy. It's only finite joy. The other thing is, even that finite joy is also full of misery. How? First of all, in order to get anything, you have to put forth a lot of effort. A lot of effort is required. It's not that I'll just sit here and I'll get it. You have to effort, put forth your effort. You have to work for it. You may have to work very hard. You'll be toiling for it day and night. Sitting in the car and driving to LA for 1.5 hours in the traffic or whatever. Going to the office, coming back. It's hard work, number one. Number two, if you get something, there's a lot of anxiety for you to preserve it. So supposing I have a job, not only I had to work hard to get the job, but then to preserve it is also an important thing. I may lose it tomorrow. So there's a lot of effort required for that. And then most of the joys of this world actually are such that we are enslaved by them. So if I start enjoying cup of tea, then I have to start my day with tea or coffee or whatever it is. A lot of people have that expression, I didn't have my coffee yet, so wait. Like without coffee, it will kick start, will not happen, you know. The engine doesn't run. Okay. So these joys that are very impermanent and have the effect of actually binding us to them are also themselves creator of a lot of pain and misery. Even while we seem to be enjoying, the back of my mind there is a misery and pain. So therefore this student now comes to the phase in his or her life where he says, this cannot be it. This cannot be complete. There has to be something beyond this. And therefore he turns the pages and comes to the end portion of the Vedas called the Vedanta. And there he finds that the Vedas proclaim that yes, there is something which is permanent. There is something which does not decrease with time or place or environment. There is something that you can attain that you will never lose. So therefore, yoga kshema, you don't have to worry about. There is something. It is called Brahman. Now the student is very interested. Just as Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, this is the royal secret. The moment he says royal secret, Arjuna is interested. Okay, give it to me because I am a royal king. You know. Give me that secret. So now the student wants to know, what is Brahman? Where can I find Brahman? What is that entity called Brahman? So the teacher says, slow down, slow down. I will give you in elaborate details everything I know about Brahman. So first he glorifies, the teacher glorifies Brahman, and how knowing Brahman you will know everything, and how knowing Brahman you will always be happy, and how knowing Brahman you will always be peaceful. All that glorification first happens. So much so glorified that now the student cannot wait any longer. Okay, you convince me now. I'll put forth my whole effort to attain that thing called Brahman. But you tell me where to find it. So it is at that time that the teacher says, that Brahman is none other than you. So immediately the air goes out of the balloon. If it was somewhere else, I would have gotten it. If it is that is to be attained, I would have attained it. I would have gone up and down Mount Everest 17 times if that was it. But what do you mean it is you? So the teacher explains that it is you, not as this limited BMI, body, mind, intellect, individualistic entity, that you have fallen under the illusion that you are this body, mind, intellect, because your intellect is deluded and you have superimposed this jiva bhava, this individualistic entity, on something that is much, much greater. So the first reaction when somebody says, you know, you are that Brahman, maybe happiness, okay, good. So some people may say, I already knew that anyway, that I was different than most of the people. But I'm glad that you rubber stamped it on my forehead. But it's not that only you are Brahman, everyone else is Brahman. So then he will wake up and say, "Why, wait a minute, what do you mean? Even my neighbor." Because we can love everybody except neighbor. So this is where the Upanishad starts. How to attain that which is already yours. So all Upanishad says that you don't have to be a seeker, because a seeker seeks something outside. This is something that you already have. You are that already at this time, although you don't know so. And therefore, make this knowledge yours. Make this knowledge yours. So in our Vedanta Prakriya, they said that there are three steps. Sravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Sravana means hear. Manana means reflect upon it. Whatever you have heard, reflect upon it. And Nididhyasana means you put that knowledge to practice on a daily basis. So that it becomes automatic. So that you become that entity itself. And this is very confusing, because it is very easy to go to the temple and say, okay, if I go to the temple every Monday, if I'm a Shiva Bhakta, or go to the temple every Saturday, if I'm a Hanuman Bhakta or whatever, that is easy, you know. Okay, I'll do it for the rest of my life. No matter what, on my way to work, I'll stop by the temple. That is something easy. But to say that, wake up and understand that the one you are going to the temple is none, that you are going and prostrating at the temple is none other than you. That is something difficult. All of a sudden now you put brakes. You say, what do you mean? Isn't it? So therefore elaborately Upanishads explained to us. One Upanishad after the other. One Upanishad doesn't do the trick, you do the second Upanishad. That doesn't do the trick, you do the third Upanishad. It doesn't do the trick, you go to the fourth Upanishad. So like that, if we do all the 10 Upanishads, there is hope that something will happen. If it doesn't, you start from the first one again. Because there is no other way. Sravana matrena. By listening and reflecting and putting it in practice alone, we can come to that state of consciousness. In fact, I cannot even say state of consciousness, but I'm saying it anyway. So therefore, coming to a lecture like this is something that we all must do. Even if you have heard it before, same knowledge can go a little deeper every time. Same idea can strike my mind a little stronger every time. So what did we study in the previous Upanishad? Let us just revise very quickly. In Ishavasya Upanishad, the very first thing that we learned was that in order to attain the knowledge about Brahman, in order to know my real nature, there are two ways I can do it. I can remain in the Pravritti Marga as a householder. I can continue to do all the activities that I am doing. And I can still progress spiritually to the point where I will attain the final goal. Or I can become a sannyasi. I can give up everything and put my whole effort in just spiritual practices alone and attain the same goal. And the teacher in the Upanishad never said which one is better, because that is individual choice. He didn't also say which one will get you there faster, because that is also doesn't matter. Then the bulk of the Upanishad was about Swarup of Brahman. So that was about what is the nature of Brahman, what is the nature of Atman. Now remember, Brahman and Atman is one in the same. Don't say Atman is part of Brahman. And the Atman is what is in me, is Atman. And the Brahman is this whole vast, supreme, all over engulfing entity is Brahman. And the little thing in me is Atman. Brahman comes from Bru means big. Big means what is the biggest? Biggest thing is, you can say in this universe, that which encompasses everything must be the biggest. So that Brahman means the biggest. Atman comes from A. A means all pervading. That which is all pervading has to be the biggest. So the name itself suggests Atma is nothing other than Brahman. So don't fall under that delusion or illusion that my Atma is small and Brahman is big. How can this Atma be that big as Brahman? We are not, Atman is not in me. We are all in Atma. That is one thing. So therefore that Swarup Jnana is given. Then in the end portion of this Isavasya Upanishad, we saw that the teacher says that if you are a devotee, if you are a seeker, you get much more benefit if you combine karma with upasana or upasana with karma. That is to say that karma alone will not lead you there. Upasana alone will not lead you there. Karma and upasana when combined. So activities combined with upasana, mental exercises such as mental japa, mental puja or meditation, done with devotion, has a better benefit. Then the teacher talked about sambhut and asambhut. What happened? Oh, mic is very close actually. I have not moved. Okay, now it is there. Okay. Thank you. So you have been listening like that for a long time. You have gone beyond cause and effect. Should I repeat everything or? Okay. Now you are scared, I'm going to repeat. So sambhut and asambhut. So cause and effect combine. Go beyond that. And then finally it says, whoever, seeker with full faith, performs this, will actually, so the promise is given, will actually attain Brahman. So that was basically Isavasya Upanishad. Now Isavasya Upanishad comes in the Sukla Yajurveda. I don't know if that's important for you or not, but I think it's good to know. And Keno Upanishad comes in the Sama Veda. So these 10 Upanishads are there. There's an easy way to remember. If you see me personally, I will tell you. It is very symmetric actually. The last one is Brihadaranyakopanishad. That also comes under Shukla Yajurveda. Then the second Upanishad that we are studying, Keno Upanishad, is in Samaveda. The second verse last is Chandogya Upanishad. That also comes from Samaveda. So you will think, oh, he knows so much, but it's easy to remember. Then the third one is Katha Upanishad. That comes in Krishna Yajurveda. Here you have to be careful. Because there is Aitreya Upanishad. So that comes in Rig Veda. And then Taittiriya comes in Krishna Yajurveda. And then the middle three Upanishads, which are those Prasna, Mundak and Mandukya, are from Atharva Veda. Okay. I think what I did not say last time, hopefully, was the Char Mahavakya. Did I talk about that? I know some of you know it already, but maybe it is important. So Shankaracharya, in his lifespan of maybe a little bit over 30 years, had established four mathas, four corners of India, schools of philosophy. And each matha was given one Veda for propagation. So the Rig Veda was given to Jagannath Puri. Rig Veda was given to Jagannath Puri. Yajurveda was given to Sringeri. Samaveda was given to Dwarika. And Atharva Veda is in Josimath, in north. Now, as I describe, every Veda has a number of Upanishads. So he selected four Upanishads and the highest philosophical statement from that Upanishad that establishes the identity between the Jiva and Brahman. And he said, these are Mahavakyas. Mahavakya means these are great statements. Not great in length. Great statements means these are really greatest statements. If you can reflect upon one thoroughly, we can go beyond this mire of delusion. That's the idea. But when you put it in a certain order, it makes much more sense. So Gurudev used to make an elaborate story, and I will not try to do it that way. He was a good storyteller also. But in brief, supposing a student has come to this point in his Vedic studies where he recognizes that now I am done with this happiness that I am getting from external world of things and beings because it is not permanent and it actually creates infatuation in me and it is full of misery also, and therefore I am going to seek a guru, and that guru is going to show me a way out of this. So therefore, in search of a guru, it was well known in those days that there were no publications or anything like that. There was no flyer that says such and such master is coming to town or anything like that. But they knew that these gurus are usually situated at the height of 8,000 to 15,000 feet. 15,000 is getting more difficult. So, past Rishikesh, Uttarkashi, Gangotri, type of height. Some may go up to Tapovan. That's higher than Uttarkashi, higher than Gangotri, higher than Gomukhi one. But anyway, so therefore this poor student, well-educated, healthy body, dedicated to learning, will look for a guru, and finally, let's suppose he finds some Mahatma sitting somewhere, some saint sitting somewhere. So he approaches and he says, I have certain questions. I am in search of permanent happiness. So please answer my questions. So the teacher will first say that you live with me, you follow all the practices that all the other people who are doing, who also came like you. Let me observe you. You observe this life, and then when I find that you are ready, I will answer. So the first answer that he may give could be Prajnanam Brahma. That Brahman that you are seeking is nothing other than your own consciousness. This sentence is called Lakshana Vakya. Lakshana means it indicates, indicative sentence. Lakshana Vakya. Prajnanam Brahma. Brahman is consciousness. So the student will reflect on it for a few days, maybe a few months, and then he will come back to the teacher and says, I'm not getting anywhere. A teacher with his compassion will say, Tat Tvam Asi. That consciousness that I am talking about, that consciousness is nothing other than you. That you are. So this becomes an Upadesha Vakya. Upadesha Vakya means instructional sentence. If you want to give somebody upadesh, if you want to instruct someone, what will you say? You would say, that tawak. And the student will go back and meditate, understanding what it means, saying, I am Atma Brahman. My Atma is the Brahman. That this is called Anusandhan Vakya. Anusandhan means you reflect on it. So in his own meditation, he is reflecting upon it. I am Atma Brahman. My Atma is Brahman. Like that. And in that reflection, one day he will come to recognize the highest truth, and therefore he will burst forth with the sentence said, Aham Brahmasmi. I am that Brahman. So therefore this is Anubhava Vakya. This is, it comes out of his own experience. So therefore these four Mahavakyas are there. Each one from each Veda. So I am Atma Brahman comes from Rig Veda. It's in Aitriya Upanishad. Tattvamasi comes from Sama Veda in Chandogya Upanishad. It's very famous. I am Atma Brahman comes from Mandukya Upanishad in Atharva Veda. And Aham Brahmasmi comes from Brahadranyaka Upanishad in Yajurveda. So the four Vakyas are there. Okay. You can reflect upon it sometime. Alright. Now, with this elaborate introduction, let us see if we can understand something about Keno Upanishad. First of all, why Keno Upanishad's name is Keno Upanishad? So all the Vedas are apaurusheya. So they are not created by any human individual being. Apaurusheya. So they are actually, so the humans have acted as conduits. Because otherwise, you know, in our language, how it did come? So they were only conduits. They were only medium. But the highest knowledge actually came from the highest authority or the supreme consciousness. And so when these sages were in their intense mood of meditation and something was revealed to them, when they came to the worldly consciousness, they burst forth with these sentences, these mantras. So therefore, this is composed of unadulterated knowledge. However, it is put into words, it is put into language, and therefore it has gathered its own limitations. Now, because they are Apaurusheya, you cannot say that this Upanishad was written by such and such person. Otherwise, it is easy. So, therefore, depending on different things, names are given. I'll give you some example. So, Isavasya Upanishad was called Isavasya because the very first word was Isha. Here, this Upanishad is called Kena Upanishad because the very word is Kena. Kena Ishitam Patati Preshitam Manaha. That's how this Upanishad starts. So, therefore, Kena Upanishad. Mundaka Upanishad, for example, is called Mundaka Upanishad because it is believed that when a student is ready to study Atharva Veda, they have to go through some rituals. And that ritual is known as Mundaka ritual, therefore the name of Mundaka Upanishad is given. Prashna Upanishad, because it is full of questions by number of disciples. Therefore it is called Prashna Upanishad. Like that, names are given. So, Kena Upanishad's name is given, now you know how. It is named after the first word. This Upanishad, as I told you, belongs to Samaveda. And it is said that it is in the Talvakar Shakha of Samaveda. It starts from the 9th chapter and it ends in 4 chapters. So, 9, 10, 11, 12. So, this Upanishad has 4 chapters. Now, this, just so that I tell you, I was able to finish Isavasya Upanishad in one sitting, I mean in one trip. This Upanishad I cannot finish in one trip. So, it will take 2 trips. And therefore, we will finish the first chapter at least. Maybe part of second chapter, I don't know. But I can definitely finish second, third and fourth at the same time, in the second trip. I just want you to know. So what is there in the first chapter, what is there in the second chapter, what is there in the third chapter, what is there in the fourth chapter, let me tell you. Because supposing you don't come next time, then at least you should know. Okay. So in the first chapter, the student is asking a very simple question. He is saying, what is it in me because of which I am functioning, because of which my mind is working, because of which my senses are working? What is it? Directed by what? Desired by what? What is that entity? Now, this is not a physiology question. In a physiology question, then you will start answering efferent nerves, and there is a lot of traffic is there by synapses. But that is not a physiological question. It is actually a spiritual question because he has gone to a spiritual master. Therefore, the master answers to the best of his ability, as much as he can put it in words. And he is very, very careful that he doesn't give the student any chance to objectify the answer that he is giving. Because even to say that it is that Brahman, because of which, then he will start creating an image of Brahman. So the purest possible answer is given. But even at the end of the chapter, the student, the teacher is not sure. He is a little doubtful that the student may have objectified my answer also. Therefore, in second chapter, he starts his examination of the student, whether the student really got it or not. If he really got it, that's fine, but if he didn't really get it, then he must try. So imagine that there was a group of students. The moment the first chapter was over, certain number of students got up and left. They got the answer now. They were there. Just a little touch was necessary. So they left. Now all the students who are there, they are saying, what's going on? Because they didn't get the answer. So therefore the teacher said, no, don't worry about them. You come closer. I will give you the real answer. They lost. So in the second chapter, he gives the answer. Again, some people left at the end of the second chapter. Then again, the other students who were there, they said, what's going on? Because they didn't get the answer. So the teacher said, don't worry about them. Let them go. You are really the brightest students. You come close to me. I will give you the answer. So he gives the elaborate story in the third chapter, which can lead to some visualization, objectification, that will help students who are not really ready yet. And then in the fourth chapter, he gives the importance of this story, finally leading to the same conclusion that a student who has gone through this with ardent devotion will actually reach that state of consciousness. So like that, this Upanishad will be over. Now, if you don't come for the next trip when I'm here, then you will prove to me that you are the best students. You need not come to the second chapter because you got it. But don't worry, nothing is going to happen because because the guru has to be Shrotriya and Brahmanista, both. That means the teacher has to be well versed in scriptures so that the same truth he can show by different angles, different ways, different examples. Because he has studied the whole scriptures and therefore he can quote from here and there. Shrotriya. Gurudev in his commentary compares that with a pandit in Banaras. But the teacher is not Brahmanista. So he did not have that experience yet. He is not established in the Brahman. He is simply Vakpatu. He knows the Shastra, but that has made no difference in him. His vision has not changed, or her vision has not changed. So therefore, we need a teacher who is Shrotriya and Brahmanista. Now the other way around is also true. A Brahmanista teacher cannot also transmit the knowledge. So Gurudev compares them with some ascetic Mahatmas who are on the heights of Himalayas, they never come down, and if you ask them, they cannot really communicate in the language that we can understand. So they are Brahmanista. They are living their highest state of knowledge, happiness, peacefulness, but they cannot communicate. So therefore we need somebody like Gurudev, who is Shrotriya and Brahmanista both. Then alone the new generation will be able to appreciate and understand and come to their own conclusion about who am I. Therefore, the only authority I have is that I studied with Gurudev. That's all. Neither I am Shrotriya nor I am Brahmanista. So therefore I told you nothing is going to happen, don't worry. You will be here for the second chapter. So that is the construction of Kena Upanishad. Okay. Now, every Upanishad, one thing I should say, this is very, very important. Remember, with every Upanishad, I will tell you why this is such a beautiful Upanishad and what is the peculiarity of this Upanishad. So the Isavasya Upanishad, I said, it belongs to the mantra portion of the Upanishad. So it is actually in the first portion. highest knowledge is actually given earlier in the Vedas. That was the beauty of the revelation. And it seems to be samanvaya between pravritti marga and nivritti marga, karma and jnana. So that was the importance of that Upanishad. Now in Keno Upanishad, of course the importance is that the teacher is giving the knowledge without really objectifying the knowledge, which is of course true. But I find this very important that Shankaracharya has written two commentaries on this Upanishad. And they are not contradictory commentaries. Not like he wrote a commentary, then I said, no, this was wrong. Let me write another one. He did not make it better. So his two commentaries are Padabhasya and Vakya Bhasya. So therefore his Vakya Bhasya, he is actually taking the whole sentence in the context of this entire knowledge, and his written commentary on that in that sense. Then in Padabhasya he is taking a pada and taking that pada in context of the rest of the padas in the Vakya, and has written a commentary in that sense. So this must be very important Upanishad for Shankaracharya to write two commentaries. This is the only Upanishad in which he has done it. So therefore such a high Upanishad we have the good fortune to go through, both you and me. Okay, now, every Upanishad starts with a Santi part, peace invocation. So what is peace invocation? Why is it necessary? First of all, we have come here, we have actually worked the whole day. I have flown this aeroplane. How many people I must have met in the flight? How many things must have happened in my mind? How many thoughts I have? Therefore, we must, when we are here for the purpose of study, we must have a single-pointed attention to this highest knowledge. And therefore, in order to gather my mind and bring it where I am sitting, throughout this whole lecture, so that my attention will not waver here or there, I will not think of something that happened today or yesterday, but I am attentively listening to everything that is being described. In order to do that, I must quieten my mind. Therefore, the Santi part is important. Now you will find that the Santi part that is here in this Upanishad is different from the one that we chanted for Ishavasya Upanishad. Why is that so? Because the Santi part is particular to a Veda. So if the Upanishad belongs to the same Veda, then the Santi part will be same. Okay. So let us see if we can go into the Santi part, chant it. And that way at least we can say that we started the Keno Upanishad today. You have book. If you don't have book, I think this Santi part. There are two Santi part here actually in the Chinmay Mission edition. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om Sahanabhavatu. Om, O Lord. So immediately my mind should go to that highest entity, Supreme Consciousness. No means both. Sahana Bhavatu means, O Lord, may you protect both of us. Who are the both? the student and the teacher. So the student teacher chants this together. For the purpose of this teaching, we both require his blessing. So may you protect us. Protect us from what? Protect us from any disturbance. Protect us from any disturbance so that at least during this lecture, my mind will be attentive. Sahanau bhunaktu. May we both enjoy this lecture. Sometimes the student is enjoying, the teacher is not enjoying. Sometimes the teacher is enjoying, the student. You know, both have to enjoy. Then only there is something will happen. So may both of us enjoy this study. Sahaviryam karvavahi. So again, let both of us put forth our best effort to make this happen. Tejasvina avadhi tamastuma with Vishavahi. Tejasvina, let that effulgence, let that knowledge shine upon us, transform us. Ma vidvishavahe. Ma means let us not. Everything let something happen. Now let this not happen. What? Let us not have some difference of opinion. Let us not unnecessarily argue about some point here or there and miss the whole boat. So let us not have any difference of opinion. So this is the first Santipa that we do quite a bit, and therefore I'm sure you are very familiar with it. I think that all of you know also what it means. So I'm not going to spend time on it. Let me go to the Santipat, that is second Santipat in the book that you have. Om Apyayantu Mamangani. Vaka Prana Chaksu Srotram. Atha Balamindriyani Cha Sarvani. Sarvam Brahmopanishadam. Maham Brahma Nirakuryam. Mama Brahma Nirakarot. Anirakaranam Astu. Anirakaranam Me Astu. Tadatmani Nirateya. Upanishatsu Dharmaha. Te Mai Santu, Te Mai Santu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So the student and the teacher are asking for three different things through this Santipat. The first thing they are asking is, let us have health. Let us be healthy. Because an unhealthy body or unhealthy senses or unhealthy mind or unhealthy intellect will not be able to pursue that highest goal of life easily. Second thing they are asking is, let us have unshakable faith. And the third thing they are asking is, let me have all the qualifications that are necessary to attain that Brahman. So health, faith and qualification. These are the three things that are asked. Let us see how. Apyayantu mama angani. Apyayantu means May they grow strong. May they become powerful. What? Mama Angani, my organs, such as Vak, speech, Prana. Prana means this vital air that we are breathing in and out. Chakshu, eyes, Srotra, ears. Atha Balam Indriyani, just Sarvani, and whatever else I have not said. All Sarvani Indriyani, all the other senses and all the other organs, make them strong. Balam, make them strong for me. Now you have to understand, what do you mean? My ears are powerful means what? I can hear like dogs can hear. No. My ears are powerful so that I will not miss a single word that you are uttering. My ears are powerful so that it will not misinterpret things and misunderstand. It will hear exactly what is being said. Etc., etc. You can imply whatever meaning. Powerful eyes, powerful vital air, powerful mind, powerful intellect, everything. Balam Indriyani cha Sarvani. Okay. Then he says, Sarvam Brahma. The student doesn't know yet, but he says, Sarvam Brahma. I have heard from where? Upanishadam. That there is some Upanishadic Brahman is there. And that Brahma alone is everywhere that I have heard. But I don't know that yet. Therefore he says, Ma Aham Brahma Nirakurya. May I not reject Brahman without trying to understand it first, saying, how can it be that which is everywhere? So I will therefore not reject, or I will not spurn, that is the language Gurudev has used here. I will not spurn Brahman. I'll put forth my faith and my effort to understand Brahman, to know Brahman. And then, while I am studying this, may not Brahman spurn me. May Brahman, may his grace continue on me. Because without his grace, I will also not be able to do anything. Therefore, there are two Mama Brahman. Mama means, you know, not Mama, Kaka, etc. First Ma is, may not. And the other Ma is for me. So may the Brahman not reject me. Nirakaranam astu, nirakaranam me astu. It's a repetition. May I not let down Brahman, may the Brahman not let down me. So this is emphasis. When it is repeated, it is emphasized. Okay. Then in the last sentence, the teacher and the student is asking for all the qualifications may be with him. So he says, Tat Atmani Nirateya. Nirateya means pursuing at all times. So when I am pursuing that Atman at all times, the dharma that is described in the Upanishads, Upanishadsu dharma, let that dharma reside in me. Te mai santu, te mai santu. What is that dharma? The fourfold qualifications. What are the fourfold qualifications? Vivek, Vairagya, Samadhi, Sat Sampatti, and Mumukshutva. So we can look at it from other way also. I actually heard someone. Samadhi Sampatti is discipline. Discipline of senses, discipline of mind, discipline of intellect. You know, the senses are not going over here and there, wherever, whatever I saw, I just run after that. The discipline. Mind is not giving power to the senses. If the senses are going, mind is sitting there, will come back. Intellect is not giving any importance to these worldly things and beings, objects of gratification. So discipline, samadhi sati sampatti. Then vairagya is dispassion. I have dispassion towards everything that is ephemeral. I am only passionate about that which is permanent. Everything that is not permanent, I have no passion about. I'm not passionate about it. I'm not going to make that goal of my life. Dispassion, vairagya. Then discrimination. Discrimination about what is good for me and what is bad for me. What is permanent and what is impermanent. What is Atma and what is Anatma. So that also I must have. So discrimination is Vivek. Dispassion is Vairagya. Samadhi Satsampatti is discipline. Now D. Now one more D left. Mumukshu, how are you going to put it? So desire. Desire to attain moksha. Desire to attain freedom from bondage. So four Ds we can remember. So that is what he is asking. The student is asking this in this prayer. Let me be endowed with these qualities so that it will be easy for me to attain the state of Brahmanhood for which I am so desirous of. So with this, the Santipatha is over. Now let us see the first mantra. We'll only do translation, don't worry. I know it has been a long class already. Keneshitam patati presitam manaha. Kena pranaha prathamah preti yuktaha. Keneshitam vachamimam vadanti. Chakshu Srotram Kaudevo Yunakti. Now one thing I should say is this Upanishad is in prose. It is in Gadya, not in Padya. And actually one method that people use is when the Upanishad is actually in Gadya, that means it's in prose, not in poetry. It is called Brahmana Upanishad. And when it is in poetry, it is called Mantra Upanishad. Just for your information. If you hear this somewhere, that means that it is in prose. So, kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha. By whom? Desired by what? Patati, fall. Preshitam, directed by. Who? This entity called mind. So who is directing this mind? Who is isitam presitam this mind? Similarly, kena prana prathama preti yukta. Propelled by whom this prana function, this breathing in and out, which is continuously happening even when we are in deep sleep. Just as the heart is beating even when we are in deep sleep. What is the propelling factor? What is that factor because of which it continues to happen? Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti. By whose prompting these words are uttered? What is the origination of these words? Where is it coming from? What is prompting it? And chakshu srotram kau devo yunakti. By what divine power these eyes and ears are directed? That is the literal translation of this mantra. There is a lot of things to be said, so we will do it next time. Suffice it to say that we have at least touched upon the first mantra of Gheno Upanishad. It's a beautiful Upanishad actually. And it is also simple Upanishad. So the answer is going to be very simple. That which is propelling it is the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear. What is this? But the interesting thing is that that answer does not objectify anything. And the whole theme in this Upanishad is that the moment you objectify something, even by calling it Brahman, you have deviated from the highest truth. Because objectification and putting it in speech can only happen in the realm of time and space. And that entity that we are trying to describe is beyond time and space. So even physicists today are saying that one cannot think of that which is beyond time. But we are coming very close to that point where we have to accept that there is something beyond time. They said we are afraid because we cannot think about it, we cannot describe it, we cannot talk about it. But we are coming very close to the point where we have to accept that there is something beyond time because time is only a concept of the mind. This is what the Vedanta has been saying for a long time. So therefore the emphasis is not to objectify. And so this becomes a very beautiful Upanishad because of that. Various ways. Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Hari Om.